This is Only a Game. I'm Bill Littlefield. On Tuesday, a federal grand jury indicted Atlanta Falcons quarterback Michael Vick and three other men in connection with an alleged dogfighting operation. The indictment charged cruelty to animals, which allegedly included electrifying and otherwise killing the dogs. The indictments came after a federal investigation of property Vick owned in Virginia. If convicted, Michael Vick could be sentenced to 6 years in prison. Joining me now on the line is Jeff Schultz of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jeff, welcome back to Only a Game.
My pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about how highly regarded Michael Vick has been in Atlanta and in the NFL, and how people in Atlanta are responding to this week's charges.
Well, to the first part of your question, I've lived here for 18 years now, and I've never, actually, since I've lived here, even in my career, seen a single athlete electrify a city the way Michael Vick did when he was first drafted by the Falcons. You know, he basically came to a moribund franchise that was playing in the cavernous Georgia Dome that had 10 to 20,000 empty seats. And almost from the time he was drafted, everybody couldn't wait for him to get on the field. Confidence in this franchise was never higher. And a lot of things in Michael Vick's life and career started to unravel, I would say, last season. There was the famous incident in which he gave the finger to fans. There was another case in which he had to settle out of court with a woman that he supposedly gave an STD to. Mm-hmm. There was, this offseason, the water bottle incident, Miami blowing off Congress. It's kind of been one thing after another. I would say he does still have a fan base here, but it has shrunk significantly, particularly in light of the latest dogfighting allegations.
Well, what kinds of things are you hearing football fans and others down there say about these allegations?
The ones who have turned on Mike Vick are outraged. Anybody who has read the indictment, it's sickening, repulsive. I mean, all those words. And I think a lot of people, number one, didn't really know dogfighting existed to the extent that I guess it does. And certainly were shocked to know that one of their favorite athletes is involved with it, possibly on a very high level. Mm. The other thing to consider here is because of the last two seasons and the fact the team didn't make the playoffs, Michael Vick was starting to be scrutinized more and more anyway. And there was a pretty decent chance this might have been his last season here at Atlanta anyway, because a new coaching staff was coming in, and he was sort of under the gun, I guess you could say, to really produce this year. So in light of what's happened recently with the federal indictment, he's certainly under scrutiny even more now, and his career, you could say, is in jeopardy.
Jeff, a lot of high-profile athletes have been charged with serious crimes, and some of them have been able to get off without jail time, and some of them have never even been convicted. How likely is that in Michael Vick's case?
Well, the most significant difference in this case from almost any other you can think of, this is the United States of America versus Michael Vick. If you look through past federal indictments, they have a pretty good record. There are estimates anywhere from 90 to 96% conviction rate on federal indictments. So they don't make a lot of mistakes. They, you know, the old attorney's expression about how you can indict a ham sandwich. The U.S. government doesn't indict a lot of ham sandwiches. And if you read the indictment, it's unbelievably detailed. Yeah. I mean, right down to having names of dogs. And, you know, you have to assume that they know far more and have far more than what they have in the indictment.
NFL Commissioner Goodell instituted some time back a new personal conduct code, and several players have been hit with lengthy suspensions without pay for various off-field transgressions. Yet Commissioner Goodell said that he was going to let due process run its course before responding to Michael Vick's circumstances. Does that seem inconsistent?
It does. I guess there would be two ways to look at it. The cynic's point of view would be that he's cutting Michael Vick more slack because Michael Vick is a much higher profile athlete, not just in this organization, but the NFL in general, than, let's say, Pac-Man Jones or Tank Johnson or some of the other players that Roger Goodell has suspended. And as much as Michael Vick has been in the news and done some dumb things and certainly drawn the ire of fans and people in general, Michael Vick doesn't really have a file per se like some of those other players, and that's what they would point to, that the new conduct policy penalizes players more who have a history of legal problems.
Michael Vick and his co-defendants will appear in U.S. District Court on Thursday, which is also the first day of the Falcons' training camp. There has been some speculation that Vick will be asked to take a leave of absence. How likely does it seem to you that he'll ever play for the Falcons again?
What is certainly gaining steam is what you just mentioned. I think Arthur Blank, the owner of the team, is looking for a way out. He understands that no matter what he does, whatever decision he makes, a segment of the population is going to be upset. And no matter what he does, it's going to affect the team in one way or another. But I do believe there will be some resolution before the first day of training camp. There's no question that Michael Vick will be in Virginia at his bond hearing on Thursday and that the team will be practicing. If you asked me to make a pick what's likely to happen, I think it'll be that. I think it'll be a paid leave of absence. And I think at some point his trial will start, and this will be his last year as a Falcon. I think it's very possible he has played his last game here.
Jeff Schultz is a columnist for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Jeff, thank you very much for joining me.
You're welcome.
The good news for the WNBA this summer, an extended contract with ESPN ABC that includes at least one important new element. The bad news is that the number one pick in last year's draft, Lindsey Harding, won't play again until next summer at the earliest. If you guessed anterior cruciate ligament when you heard that, you guessed right, though actually it was Ms. Harding's left. Joining me now to further explore the state of the WNBA is Clay Callum, proprietor of FullCourt.com. Clay, welcome back to Only a Game.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
The WNBA's new TV deal, which will run through 2016, is a landmark agreement in that the league will receive rights fees, a sign of significant progress?
Well, yes and no. Obviously, it's great news for the WNBA that someone is willing to pay them money, but the real question is how much money? If you read between the lines of the ESPN announcement, they said millions and millions of dollars going to the WNBA. Well, over the span of that contract, that could mean as little as $1 million a year, and that's really not going to help the teams that much. Because there's 13 teams or 14, and you do the math, and it's not going to turn things around. If the ESPN announcement had sent tens of millions of dollars, then it might have meant that each team was going to be getting a significant sum of money each year. On the whole, it's good news for the WNBA, but it's not great news.
Clay, the dreaded acronym ACL has reappeared. To what extent will the battle for playoff spots be determined by whose anterior cruciate ligaments have held up and whose haven't?
Aaron Buescher's ACL injury in San Antonio is more significant than Lindsey Harding's, even though Harding is probably going to be a better player. Minnesota is not really even a playoff threat at this point. While when Buescher went down for San Antonio, the Silver Stars were right near first place. Her absence creates a huge hole in the Silver Stars lineup, which sort of opens the door for Sacramento, for Seattle, for Phoenix to try to make a move.
As the teams turn the corner into the second half of the season, the Indiana Fever looks like a lock for the playoffs. To what extent is that a function of the presence of Tully Bevilacqua, late of the Seattle Storm?
Tully Bevilacqua is a really interesting player. She's sort of the classic, you can't measure her by statistics kind of player. She plays great defense. She's very intelligent. She has a knack for hitting big shots. She hit another big shot Thursday night in Indiana's one-point win over Chicago. She's a tremendous person if you've ever talked to her. She's a leader in the locker room. She understands the game. She's very important to them, even though when you look in the box score the next day, she's got 6 points and 4 assists, nothing special. But she's really the glue to that team, and I'll guarantee you that with Sue Bird's knee hurting right now, Dan Donovan wishes she had Tully back in Seattle.
Among Tully Bevilacqua's other qualities is that she's an Aussie. How is it that Australia has produced such an extraordinary number of really good female basketball players?
You know, I think it's just sort of the cycle. There is one aspect that they do, one thing that the Australians do that's of interest. They have what's known as the Australian Institute of Sport. So Lauren Jackson and all of these players at age 15 or 16 go off to what is essentially an athletic boarding school run by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And they bring in athletes from all sports, and they go to high school and they play together and so on and so forth. And that's great, but they've been doing that for a long time. Athletes like Lauren Jackson and Penny Taylor, they don't come around all the time, whether you have an institute of sport or not, and they're just riding the wave right now. They're a very good team. They have a very good chance to win the gold at the Olympics in 2008, especially if the United States doesn't make a move and change coaches and change out Ann Donovan as the head coach.
The most impressive teams in the West have been San Antonio, Sacramento, and Phoenix, with the Seattle Storm apparently playing possum at this point. In what order do you think those teams are going to finish?
I think it's going to be very difficult to sort it out. I think the loss of Aaron Buescher is really key, but of course Sacramento's been playing without DeMaia Walker, their power forward, all year. She tore a patellar tendon. So both of those teams are pretty strong. Phoenix doesn't rebound, but they do everything else. Seattle underperforms. I really think they have the best talent in the West, but Ann Donovan just doesn't seem to be able to get it out of them. Sue Bird's supposed to return. I think in the end, I'm going to go with Sacramento to sort of hang on and win a closely bunched race. Those four teams will make the playoffs, and once you get into postseason, who knows what will happen.
Finally, I have to ask you to predict this year's champ, Clay, because the WNBA season goes by very quickly, and the playoffs will soon be upon us.
They will indeed, and I really think that the best team is the Detroit Shock. If they can get some play out of Kara Braxton and Katie Feenstra at the five position, they are the strongest team. I think they're a little more consistent than Indiana, and I would think that in the end, we will unfortunately have to listen to Bill Laimbeer crowing about how good the Shock are again.
Clay Callum presides over the website fullcourt.com. He joins me to talk about the WNBA on Only a Game from time to time as well. Thank you, Clay.
Hey, thank you. Always a pleasure.
You can listen at leisure to Only a Game podcasts or to programs past and present by visiting our website, onlyagame.org. It's 19 minutes. I'm Bill Littlefield. Ahead on Only a Game, Charlie Pierce discusses the week in sports. But first, the Navy SEALs Trident Challenge has taken place in Minneapolis and in Boston, and organizers hope it will someday barnstorm to other U.S. cities. According to the Navy, the rigorous test is designed to promote physical fitness. Only a Game's Karen Given attended the challenge late last month to see what the attendees thought.
Outside Boston University's Fitness and Recreation Center, helium balloons and rock music herald a visit by the Navy SEALs, who arrived yesterday with a skydive onto the school's athletic field. Inside, Petty Officer Sean Tufts smiles as he gently barks orders at a group of about 25 athletes who've come to test their skills against the Navy SEALs.
Guys, remember, this is a maximum effort evolution, all right? Try and do your best. All right, you guys already taking a big step by showing up here today. Might as well put out as best you can.
The SEALs like to tout their status as the most physically fit of the military special forces. Their training program is so demanding that traditionally, only 25% of recruits graduate Basic Underwater Demolition School, or BUDS. Once a SEAL receives his trident, he'll spend the rest of his career doing PT, physical training, not just once, but twice a day.
You guys look scared. You guys scared? No? You guys fired up? All right. Well, one, you look scared, and two, you don't sound fired up. You guys fired up?
Yeah!
You guys fired up?
Yeah!
All right, go out there. Max effort, right? Max effort. I don't want to see anybody sandbagging.
Let's go. Get in the water.
The 200 people who answered the radio and print ads to take today's challenge will be asked to do the same PST, or physical screening test, that Navy recruits must pass in order to enter SEAL training. A 500-yard swim in 12 and a half minutes, 42 push-ups in 2 minutes or less, 50 sit-ups in 2 minutes or less, at least 6 pull-ups, and a 1.5-mile run in 11 minutes or less. It all sounds a little scary.
No, there's nothing to be afraid of.
You shouldn't be afraid of working out, and that's all we're going to do.
Petty Officer John Murray is a SEAL who's been serving in Afghanistan and Iraq for most of the past 6 or 7 years. So he's certainly not going to be put off by a physical challenge.
Just a short little run, a swim, some push-ups and pull-ups, and that's all. Come on, it's fun. Have a little fun. Get off the couch, get your lazy butts off the couch, get down here, and work out a little bit, get in shape.
The swimmers jump in and get started. They're a little nervous at first, limited to only the breaststroke or combat side stroke. But they start to gain confidence as they count off their laps.
Louder!
One!
Although they struggle, most finish in less than 13 minutes. After a short break to change into dry clothes, the group boards a bus to go up the street to the indoor track for push-ups, sit-ups, pull-ups, and the run.
Two more, come on, two more. Come on.
There are currently less than 2,500 SEALs, and the Pentagon wants to grow that force by more than 500 in the next 5 years. To that end, the Navy has started recruiting at marathons, triathlons, extreme sports events, and college swimming and wrestling camps. But Cornell Galloway, program advertising manager for Navy Recruiting Command in Tennessee, says today's event isn't part of that effort.
Well, actually, the Navy is really aware of the condition of physical fitness in our schools amongst our youth, and we wanted to kind of give back and make a contribution in that effort. So we wanted to challenge the community and to see how everybody stacked up against their physical condition against the Navy SEALs.
Galloway isn't saying how much the day is costing the Navy, but between renting out facilities at BU, flying in the Leapfrogs, the Navy's skydiving team, and advertising costs, it can't be cheap.
Well, no, but you can't put a value on you know, return on investment out there. We want to make a contribution. No, I don't think money is the issue here today. We'll get back and count beans when we get back into our office in Millington. We're kind of enjoying it. I don't think we have any agendas here today. The real benefit is how they feel about themselves at the end of the competition.
Weston Graham is called a Depper. He's in the Navy's delayed enlistment program and holds a contract to go to SEAL training. Ever since signing up back in November, he's been looking forward to shipping out.
Not to sound cheesy, but these are like real-life superheroes, you know, and they're human, too. I actually only did one sport through high school, and that was crew. But I learned discipline and how to deal with physical pain, and I realized we were just a really tight group. And you know, I transferred schools, but I realized I wanted to get that feeling again, and I realized I could find it in the Navy, and honestly, you know, that's what it's like.
Joining the Navy SEALs to get back the camaraderie of a high school rowing team might seem like a stretch, but John Allen Williams, professor of political science at Loyola University Chicago and retired captain in the Naval Reserve, says Weston Graham is likely to find what he's looking for.
Oh, absolutely. What you find in the military is the sort of teamwork that you find in sports, which is another reason they recruit at sporting events. You go to sports teams where you find young people, men and women, who are used to teamwork, who can take orders and give them, who are used to authority, you know, the coach, and that's a very good thing for the military.
The military doesn't publish total advertising dollars spent on sporting events, but last year the Marines reportedly spent $6.5 million with ESPN. The Navy sponsors the Winter and Summer X Games. The Army stages the All-American Bowl. Then there's the more unusual expenditures, like the Air Force's $150,000 custom-built Orange County chopper and the Army's $100,000 advertising campaign in Paintball magazine. Pete Sepp is with the National Taxpayers Union.
Considering that the armed services often have to struggle to meet recruiting goals, it's vital that every single tax dollar be spent effectively. And unless the armed services are comprehensively tracking the results for the money they've spent, it would make sense to hold off spending any more until they can figure out whether this money is being invested effectively.
It's hard to quantify results from non-direct recruiting events like military flyovers at football games and skydiving demonstrations at air shows. Nobody's handing out pamphlets extolling the virtues of military service at the Trident Challenge. And the only recruiting comes from a video playing quietly on a TV that no one's watching. But Professor Williams says the day is an effective recruiting tool nonetheless.
Let's face it, a young man who is just, you know, in the throes of adolescence and still unsure about himself and his body is changing, and to have some Navy SEAL tell him, hey, you could be one of us, this is powerful stuff. And this is exactly the kind of person that they want to recruit. But really, if we're going to have a military, if we're either going to have a draft or we're going to try to convince people to join it. It is not an all-volunteer force. It's an all-recruited force.
And up now. Go. Pull, man. You got it. A little more. There you go, man. You got it.
Back at the Trident Challenge, another Depper named Joe Bennett is providing much of the motivation for the pull-up portion of the test. Most of today's athletes are somewhere in their late teens and early 20s, and almost exclusively male. But Joe has spent most of the day offering encouragement to 52-year-old Debbie Duffy. While the guys showed up in dark-colored, skin-tight swimming trunks, Debbie arrived in a pink-flowered bathing suit, beneath which you could see the scar from a heart valve replacement 10 years ago. Debbie came today to test out her fitness level, but despite Joe's best motivational efforts, she wasn't able to do a single pull-up. She's not shy about vocalizing her disappointment.
I hate him. I couldn't try any harder.
Was that worse than the swimming?
Not much worse. Worse than push-ups. I like push-ups in comparison.
So what do you think so far? All you have left is the run? That's all you have
to do? I hate running. Last time I ran was into my husband's arms, and he's been dead a year and a half, so I hate running.
On your mark. Get set. Go.
Though she's tired, Debbie joins the rest of her group for 12 laps around the track. Petty Officer Gonzalez looks on. He's been working with Deppers who are getting ready for Bud's training. And although he's clear on the fact that the day is not about recruiting, he can't help but notice a few candidates for his program.
I did see a couple, and I did see Alicia, a little boy who's 8 years old. The guy was smoking. You know what I mean? I'm sure when he's a senior, he goes, you know what? I love the way that was. I love that physical challenge. I love that mental challenge. I want that challenge. I need to go to the Navy recruiting office. I need to sign up.
The Navy might get a shot at 16-year-old John O'Shea a little sooner. He finishes the mile-and-a-half run in 8:04, and he barely looks like he's broken a sweat. As he comes off the track, one of the Deppers asks him for his other scores.
Sit-ups at 105.
Good.
And push-ups at 76.
You want a job?
What?
Most of John's scores surpass what the Navy calls the competitive standards, or the scores recommended for success at Bud's training. John says he didn't come here to find out about joining the military. He just wanted to have fun and get a good workout. But after a day of teamwork and booyahs, he's considering it.
They haven't put pressure on anyone, but it kind of makes you want to go in, because it looks like fun and pushing yourself to the limit, and that's what I like to do, so... It sounds pretty cool.
Even though they go off to war?
That's the only part I don't like. I don't like the shooting people and getting shot at. That's the only reason why I wouldn't do it. But it sounds cool.
At the end of the day, John will leave with a free T-shirt and a copy of a DVD called Defending Freedom in the 21st Century. For their end of the deal, the Navy requires quite a bit of information from John. Not only his name, age, and contact information, but also how he scored on 5 different physical tests, entered into a computer by civilians in white T-shirts. Joe Galzetti with Campbell Ewald, an ad agency hired by Navy Recruiting, says there's nothing to read into that.
That's their scores. All that information is being put into the computer, tabulating, keeping track of that, and there are awards associated with all that. So it's purely just to give them a sense of how they did.
So the recruiters aren't going to be looking at the scores from the 16-year-old kid and say, I want to call him.
No.
But as our interview concludes, Galzetti looks like he has something else he wants to say.
Well, no, it's about the recruitment thing, and there is information that's happening, and there is a chance that, yeah, somebody will get a phone call. If people want to provide us their information, which they do, they're going to get a phone call from the local recruiter.
Let's go, good job!
Depper Joe Bennett has finished his run. At 10:10, it's his personal best. In the past 2 months, Joe says he's improved his scores on every portion of the PST. But he's not likely to boast about the improvements he's made or about how much help he's given today to people like Debbie Duffy.
Oh, God, no. Best motivators are actually over there. They're the ones who really got me into this. When I was first starting off, they pushed me, past my limits. I'm glad I've done my job, and I think I have a lap to go run with her, though.
Oh, okay.
I'll go with her last lap.
With that, Joe cuts our interview short and joins Debbie on the track. She's little more than halfway through her run, and every time they come around for another lap, Joe jogs off the track and grabs a few more people to join in. Joe says the Navy SEALs don't leave anyone behind.
If Navy, we will carry you up. We have you. You are our team. We will not leave you behind.
Before long, almost the entire group is back on the track. Joe lets Debbie slow to a walk on the corners and then starts her running again on the straightaways. And then, in true military fashion, there's the singing.
Superman is the man of steel.
Superman is the man of steel.
The cadence tells a tale of romance. Superman meets a Navy SEAL. Superman is impressed. Lois Lane dumps Superman and starts dating the SEAL. Debbie is thrilled.
I did. I want to be Lois.
I don't want to be no Green Beret.
I don't want to be no Green Beret.
They only beat the one today.
As the group rounds the final corner, Debbie breaks into a sprint and crosses the finish line first, with her arms raised high. As she catches her breath, she can't say enough nice things about Joe and the other guys who helped her make her way around the track.
Well, actually, these are the same ages that get on a plane and go to Iraq, so it shouldn't surprise us, but it does. I always looked up to Navy SEALs. I always have, and all the people in the military. I always have. Even more so now that they would do this for a 52-year-old broad, you know?
Debbie talks about going back to her trainer at the gym to get some new workouts. And she laughs about how much her friend Martha would have enjoyed, quote, the gorgeous 20-year-olds bearing their tattoos. The Navy hasn't yet decided whether they'll hold another Trident challenge. If they do, rest assured, Debbie Duffy will be there. For Only a Game, I'm Karen Given.
Our story on the Navy SEALs Trident Challenge was produced with help from Ben Singer, who also took part in the event. Please check out his audio slideshow at onlyagame.org. You're listening to Only a Game. Our June 30th show included a story by Ron Schachter about a hollering contest in Kentucky. Perhaps you recall it. In case you don't, it sounded like this. Rita Hannigan, who listens to the program on WFCR in Amherst, Massachusetts, sent a card in response to that story. The sounds, quote, intrigued our two dogs, she wrote, a guide dog puppy and an adult. They sat in front of the radio with heads turning in unison. Too funny for words. Brian Cook, a WBUR listener, emailed to say that he was delighted by the music that we played after Charlie Pierce and I congratulated the team from Scotland for winning an international scholastic debating competition. As a Scot, my wee beastie was pounding when I heard the pipes playing Scotland the Brave, Mr. Cook wrote. But he was even more taken with my conversation with William Baker, the author of the book Playing with God, Religion, and Modern Sport. Growing up in Scotland, I was keenly aware of the marriage of the two when watching soccer, wrote Mr. Cook. Rangers and Celtic epitomized the religious divide. With a Scottish mother, English father, our house could be fun at times when I was growing up, but in the end, both my parents taught me the real lesson of life, accept people for who they are. Keep up the good work. Writing from Christian Life Academy, Emily Mahoney opined, I think Mr. Baker misunderstands why players and coaches pray. We teach that we do not pray to win, but to thank God for the opportunity to play. Regarding my mention last week of the decline in the television audience for Major League Baseball's All-Star Game, William Morton of Westford, Massachusetts wrote, With an 8-month-old boy in our house, we were already half asleep by the time the first pitch was thrown. Enough with all the pre-game junk. Just give us the game. And finally, Vicki Murphy of San Diego, who hears the show on KPBS, emailed to say, I laughed so hard at Alyssa Eli's commentary about cycling, but I don't see her name listed on the contributor list. How can I email her? We'll endeavor to correct that oversight. The website upon which that list appears is onlyagame.org, and you can reach us or Alyssa through it. You can also write us at onlyagame, WBUR, 890 Commonwealth Avenue, Boston, Massachusetts, 02215, or you can leave a message on the listener line by calling 617-353-1860. It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The construction site offering girls and boys of all ages blocks and building toys, both domestic and imported, at constructiontoys.com. And Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, Bicon.com. This is NPR, National.
I'm Bill Littlefield. Coming up on Only a Game, my grandmother can post up your grandmother. But first, a discussion of the week's news by Charlie Pierce, who joins me from the studios of NPR in Washington. Hello, Charlie.
Should be talking about my grandmother.
Mine neither. Michael Vick will not be taking the snaps when the Atlanta Falcons start practicing next week, Charlie. He'll be in court for arraignment on charges that he's been involved in staging dogfights and various other grim crimes related to those dogfights. If found guilty, he could go to jail for as long as 6 years. So far, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has not invoked his zero tolerance for bad behavior policy. Are you surprised by that?
No, I think this is going to be an extended pretrial period. At some point, I suspect Mr. Vick will cut a deal and take a plea that keeps him out of jail. At that point, it may well keep him out of the league, too.
Humane Society Deputy Manager John Goodwin said on Wednesday that Michael Vick is only one of many athletes involved in dogfighting. Do you think that's an accurate assessment?
I have no idea. I mean, this gentleman works for the Humane Society. He's got more expertise than I do. It's best seen, I think, as an unusually bloody and garish and grotesque part of the culture of gambling that goes on under the level of all of our professional sports. Whether that's Michael Jordan dropping a couple of million at a blackjack table, or people betting on their own golf matches or whatever.
Reports surfaced yesterday that the FBI is investigating 13-year NBA referee Tim Dunahy, who allegedly bet on basketball games he officiated during two seasons and who may have connections to organized crime. This is a potentially devastating development for the league, isn't it?
Everybody has said for years that the way to fix a game was not to bribe players who make a bazillion dollars anyway. It's to bribe the referees who don't. And there was a strong rumor back in the 1980s about college basketball referees. You had NBA referees supplementing their income by trading down their first-class seats to coach seats and then pocketing the difference. That got them in trouble with the IRS. The NBA has a big, big, big problem on its hands.
According to the All China Sports Federation, Houston Rockets center Yao Ming is taking too much time to plan his wedding and appear on behalf of the Special Olympics, and not enough time spent training with China's national team. I have a hard time faulting Yao for his priorities. How about you?
I don't either, but it's nice to have this nostalgic look at the old communist sports apparatus, though, isn't it? You're not doing this for the honor of the revolution. You're a bum. You're picking out silverware patterns and auditioning wedding bands. Stop listening to people sing feelings and get back over here and play with your country.
The Chinese club of Yi Jianlian is now saying that it is possible that the 6'11 forward will play for the Milwaukee Bucks, who selected him at number 6 in this year's NBA draft. However, the club is still trying to help Yi obtain a trade to a team that is, quote, suitable to Yi's growth. Why can't he grow in Milwaukee?
Believe me, between Usinger's sausage and the various malted barley products of Milwaukee, I can attest you can grow there, especially if you're a young person. I mean, I have to rise to the defense of my adopted hometown. There's a fine new art museum. There's terrific cultural life there. The Chinese are really, I mean, I've got about 3 billion new enemies now.
The number 2 pick in the NBA draft, Kevin Durant, has $60 million coming to him before he's taken a single shot as a pro. Nike Vice President of Global Basketball Craig Zanon said that Durant, quote, has been with Nike his whole career, and
uh-oh,
he felt comfortable with the shoe company. His whole career?
His whole professional career, I'm sure they meant, since draft day to now, and certainly not that Nike would have been you know, salting the earth back in back in junior high or high school, I'm sure I would be shocked to learn this.
You're perhaps not entirely surprised that Stephon Marbury, who plays for the Knicks, wants to play somewhere else when his contract runs out in a couple of years, but are you surprised by where he wants to play next?
No, he wants to go to Italy, and I think that's a I don't know why more players don't do that. You know, he's got all the money he's ever going to need. He seems to be stuck in a no-win situation in the NBA. There's certainly nothing wrong with this.
In baseball news, just as you anticipated last week, Julio Franco found himself another job. He's joined the Braves in Atlanta. He'll be 49 years old next month, and he says he would like to play until he turns 50. How well does he have to do with Atlanta to ensure that outcome?
Well, look, I said this last week that he wasn't going to be unemployed for long. He's a 49-year-old useful professional hitter, and if Atlanta lets him go, somebody else will pick him up.
I don't know how old Ichiro Suzuki will be when he retires, but the Seattle Mariners will still be paying him when Ichiro is 59. He signed a new contract that will defer payments to him at least through the year 2032. Good deal all around.
Terrific for all concerned, and Ichiro is now an enormously untradeable product. So I suspect he will be staying in Seattle for as long as necessary.
One of Ichiro's countrymen lost his membership to the Baseball Writers Association of America and his season press credential this week after the Fuji Evening News. Hirooki Homma asked Roger Clemens for an autograph, but Mr. Homma will be able to cover the Yankees on a game-to-game basis, and at least he didn't have any bread thrown at him.
No, but, you know, I mean, this is something you obviously don't do, although I can tell any smug American sports writers that I once worked with a guy at a newspaper who went to the NBA All-Star game and found an autographed basketball in one of the locker rooms that all the All-Stars had signed and slipped it under his coat and went out the front door.
He must have been a big guy.
At least this guy asked for his own autographs.
One of the more unusual baseball-related crimes of the decade, or any decade, transpired last week when a beer truck containing 51 kegs of beer worth over $3,000 was stolen outside the New Orleans Zephyrs Stadium. And when the truck was found, just a day or so later, guess how many kegs were left?
Not as many as were on it before. I think there were 38 left. I guess you just drive it up an alley and open the back and start selling kegs over the counter.
Gary Player announced this week that he knows of at least one golfer who has used steroids. Are we talking about a living golfer?
I have no idea where Gary Player is going with this. People have got to know better than just throw this accusation out and let people make up their own minds. I like Gary Player. I respect Gary Player. He's an important figure in the history of his sport, but this was just really dumb.
The people who maintain that rugby players are the toughest athletes found themselves a champion this week in Ben Sislowski, who went over 3 months without realizing that he had a tooth lodged in his head before he finally went and saw a doctor and said, "My head hurts.
My brain hurts."
I'm assuming this was somebody else's tooth.
Yeah, it was, actually. I guess they're not really sure at what point in his rugby career he got bit on the noggin. But he did remove it, and he has suggested that he will give it back if anyone can prove it's theirs.
And finally, it was learned this week that David Beckham, the newest member of the Los Angeles Galaxy, has banned the Spice Girls from staying with him and his wife, Victoria, a.k.a. Posh, in Los Angeles, saying that the Spice Girls are, quote, much too much when they're all together. Were you aware that he had such good taste in music?
Well, I mean, I realize he had good taste in Spice Girls because of the one he married. But it's really sad when musical giants fall out like this. I mean, there's the day that the Beatles broke up. There's the day the plane went down in Clear Lake, Iowa. And now there's the day where Posh and Bex don't want to hang with the rest of the girls.
Sporty Charlie Pierce writes for the posh but not overly scary Boston Sunday Globe magazine and joins me each week at this time on Only a Game. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Bill.
If you're a technophobe like me, you may wonder what a podcast is. Let's consult the dictionary. Pod, a school of marine mammals, such as seals, whales, or dolphins. Cast, to throw with force or hurl. So if you'd like to throw dolphins with force, hurl whales, or listen to all of Only a Game's weekly offerings, please go to onlyagame.org and click on podcast. They're crazy for college basketball in North Carolina and Indiana. Everybody knows that. The pro game has taken hold of fans in Los Angeles, Dallas, San Antonio, and maybe even a few places east of the Mississippi. But Iowans enjoy some provincial hoops delights of their own because they can follow a group of round ball veterans with a passion for the sport and a healthy appreciation for the way the game used to be played. From Des Moines, Nebraska Public Radio's Avishai Artsy has our report.
It's an exhibition night for two granny basketball teams in a Des Moines gymnasium. The Car X Strutters and the Hot Pink Grannies are lacing up. They'll take turns playing against a team of state public health employees called Lighten Up Iowa. Then they'll play against each other.
The typical game, we'd have 4 8-minute quarters and a halftime. And we would be a little more serious, but tonight's going to be fun.
That's Jewel Chapman. She started the Hot Pink Grannies, the first Des Moines team. She explains that you don't have to have grandkids to play granny basketball. You just need to be 50 or older.
It's great. It suspends reality for a while. You know, I leave the house and say I'm going to basketball practice and I'm 16 again.
The granny uniforms are a far cry from the baggy jerseys and shorts worn by NBA players. All the grannies wear white blouses, black neckties, and black bloomers. The Hot Pink Grannies wear pink knee-high socks and headbands. The Car X Strutters have got yellow socks and black aprons with multicolored rectangles. The grannies say playing basketball keeps them from getting bored and keeps them healthy. Here's Hot Pink Granny number 6, Betty Richardson from Des Moines. She's 75 years old.
It takes strength that I didn't have before I started, because I was sitting home making baby quilts instead of, you know, getting up and exercising. It made a difference. And the new friends I've met, have just, everyone has been good.
Betty's husband, Dale, comes to just about every game to cheer her on. He admits he was a little skeptical at first.
I laughed when I first heard it because I didn't think about Granny's playing basketball. But she's proved that it's really been very helpful and very good.
Yeah, then just kind of go back and forth. Like I say, working the wrists out, fingers out a little bit too. Good. There you got it.
John Baker, an elementary school gym teacher in Des Moines, helps lead the pregame stretches. He says this game proves that physical activity is important for people of all ages.
And through that, you're only as old as you feel. And I think through this game that they're used to playing in the 20s, it keeps them excited and motivated for activity. And ultimately, the quality of their life is increased. And that's what it's all about. They're really having fun and being with each other out here and socializing and staying fit. And that's what it's all about.
Rita Leitzinger is a player and a coach for the Hot Pink Grannies. An entire section of the bleachers is cheering her on.
That's my daughter and my husband and my mother up there and my cousin. And we got a whole group here.
So the family comes out to support you pretty often?
Sure, sure. I sat through enough of her games. She can sit through some of mine.
Maggie Leitzinger says she loves coming to see her mom play.
It's hilarious. It's fun. They really enjoy it. And they always have fun. They're doing their pregame dance. They do a 50s style dance or 20s style dance, I guess. I don't really know how to describe it. A bunch of old ladies dancing.
Granny basketball has most of the same rules as regular basketball. No holding, no double dribbling. But there are a few others as well. Kevin Teal, a public health employee who's serving as the announcer tonight, lays them out.
The rules prohibit running, jumping, stealing a ball from another player's hands, and even though running is prohibited, hurrying up is perfectly acceptable.
Those rules go back 8 decades, according to Barb McPherson. She's 62 and full of energy. She played basketball in high school in Des Moines, and her dad was the coach. McPherson started the first granny basketball team a couple years ago with some friends. She says they follow the rules for 6-on-6 girls basketball from the 1920s.
Because they thought that women couldn't run and jump back then, and they were very ladylike.
And so that's why they work for us, is because we can't do any of that stuff anyway.
The rules also divide the floor into three zones, and the guards, forwards, and centers have to stay in their designated areas. McPherson says it would be hard to imagine the women playing by official NBA rules.
The way they play now is it's like a football game out there. And now we try not to allow that kind of thing, because it's just not safe for us somewhat decrepit little people.
But even with rules against running and jumping, it's hard to avoid a few mishaps. Betty Richardson explains.
I have had an injury. I fell flat on my face, you know, but it didn't stop me from playing. It bruised my ribs, and several of the girls have had that. And then we get these, you know, where the ball hits your fingers like this. That's why, and I'm not supposed to wear my rings, but it jams up your knuckles. But you can live with that.
Jane Silvers, a 58-year-old computer programmer, says she's taken her share of spills as well.
Yeah, I've fallen a couple of times, but I've got plenty of padding on the backside, so it just absorbs it all. I bounce right back up.
When Granny Basketball started in the fall of 2005, there were 20 players. Now there are at least 100, with 8 teams spread across Iowa. Barb McPherson says she's received emails from women in Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and California who want to start their own teams.
So hopefully it'll spring up everywhere. We can have a national tournament, just like March Madness for grannies.
For now, granny basketball enthusiasts will have to settle for the closest thing to March Madness for grannies. The Iowa State tournament concludes today in Ames. For Only a Game, I'm Avishai Artsy in Des Moines.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Gabe O'Connor. Our technical director is John Perotti. We had help this week from Ben Singer. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. If you'd like to experience Ben Singer's Navy SEALs audio slideshow, check out Avishai Artsy's Granny Hoops photo gallery, or listen to stories past and present, please visit onlyagame.org. To order a copy of Only a Game, call 1-800-909-9287. CDs are $15. That's 1-800-909-9287. Our final word comes from Navy Recruiting Command's Cornell Galloway, who reveals his response when he was asked to participate in the Trident Challenge.
Well, I thought about it, and then I sat down.
Well, I'm with you on that one, Cornell. It's probably what I would have done, too. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, the Kellogg Foundation, helping people help themselves by investing in children, their families, and their communities on the web at WKKF.org. Ann and John Herman, supporting City Year and the young adults who dedicate a year of their lives to community service and leadership development, cityyear.org. And the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world at macfound.org.